With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons including Brian Creevy, Justin Dietrich, I'm sorry, I've probably butchered your name, Gavin Driver, Alistair Mitchell, and Raphael, many more who are supporting us directly. You can join them, get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen to us record live, get our weekly sister show, Extra Message, much, much more by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Ian, before we started recording the show today, I think we had one of our most insightful conversations ever, which spanned everything from should a robot check your prostate to what is the current ethical status of a head transplant through to figuring out whether or not we can mix the show and its music live, which it turns out and we can.
Seems like it's going very well. I did wonder what happens if we make a mistake when there's a bed. Is it going to be impossible to correct?
Well, unlike the aforementioned head transplants, it shouldn't be too much of an issue to fix it if it goes wrong. I will simply redub my lines. So anyone listening to this, unless you're a patron listening to our raw live recording, then you probably won't notice any of the glaring errors that result from me using our patrons as a bit of a guinea pig.
But I also think it's quite good because there's something about doing it as the finished production sounds that makes it feel more like a radio production, which means that you're focused a bit more and you're thinking, I must not mess this up.
I am. I mean, I don't know about you, mate, but I'm permanently thinking I must not mess up the podcast.
And yet we do so frequently.
You do indeed, yes.
I beg your pardon?
Shall we do some news?
Yes.
Okay. My old employer, Wired, had a brilliant story this week that explained that the government is secretly trialling a system to log and store the web browsing of every single person in the country. Wired wrote that for the last 2 years, police and internet companies across the UK have been using a tool that's been legal under the Investigatory Powers Act, or the Snoopers Charter, of course, as we all tend to call it, since that was introduced in 2016, so five years ago. It involves, Wired says, the creation of internet connection records, which contain the metadata about the sites you visit, when you visit them, how long you visited them for, and so forth. So, for instance, this is my hypothesis, my example, not Wired's. For instance, the system might log that at, say, 11:50 p.m. on a given Wednesday, you visited, Ian, you visited Pornhub.com and actively browsed it for 27 minutes, then went to Tinder.com for 3 minutes, followed by a website for a sexual health clinic, and finally went to Gmail.
So nice of you to include me in this theoretical voyage of internet usage.
I just like to use believable examples. Anyway, it wouldn't log the individual videos that this pretend person was watching on Pornhub, for example, but it wouldn't take a genius in that scenario to figure out from a log file held by an ISP what you were up to and perhaps maybe what your health concerns were. They're not things that you necessarily want to be having shared or logged, whether or not it's for anything illegal or legal. Now, Wired has a lot more detail in its story, and I do encourage everyone to read it. There's a link in this episode's description or at uktechshow.com for this episode. But here are some of the other important details. The tests are being run by two unnamed internet service providers, the Home Office and the National Crime Agency. Wired wrote that the specific nature of the trial is a closely guarded secret. It's unclear what data is being collected, which companies are involved, and how the information is being used. The Home Office refused to provide details to Wired of the trial, saying, though, it was just small scale and is being conducted to determine what data might be acquired and how useful it is. Data can only be stored if it's necessary and proportionate to do so, and those ICRs, those records, were introduced to help find fight serious crime, the Home Office said. So this is something that has been going on for a while. We don't know which ISP is doing it. I think it's generally in these instances, it's safe to assume it's one of the big ones.
I could hazard a guess at which two.
You probably could, but since we don't know, I don't want to name that. Yeah. But generally, things like this tend to involve the bigger ones because they need the data. They need to see how this sort of things works at scale. And ISPs in general have never really been in favor of having to store the records of every activity that users make on their networks, because it's so incredibly data intensive, you know, to log all that stuff. So they've never really wanted to do it, and if they were forced to do it, then obviously money would have to, I mean, probably tens if not hundreds of millions of pounds would have to go into bankrolling these efforts on behalf of the ISPs if they had to do it, which inevitably, since it would probably put many of those companies out of business to do so, would be passed along to us either in the form of higher bills or higher taxes. Either way, it sounds like a really terrible idea. Ian, do you have any thoughts at this juncture?
I'm absolutely livid by the very nature, very notion of the idea. It just doesn't feel like there's any justification for this whatsoever. I think, you know, surveillance of this nature should be managed in the way that it always has been traditionally, in that if you believe someone's up to something, you get a warrant. It's like a wiretap, isn't it? You know, you would go to the court and say, I would like to survey what this person does online for a fixed period of time. I've got this suspicion. Here is my evidence that backs this up. You know, and then they would get the approval to do that. And I think that should be done with the ISPs. And I also feel like it should be something where it's a physical thing. So imagine like a wiretap where you're like, you know, physically taking a call and monitoring it. I think there should be a specific piece of hardware that does this, so that it's known what's going on and that it can't just be something that can be applied willy-nilly across anyone. I just think it's an absolute disgrace, and it makes me far more likely to look into solutions to employ a VPN on my home network, which is something I haven't really enjoyed doing because it does have issues with latency and such. But I mean, there will be ways, I'm sure, to use a VPN selectively. So web traffic, for example, could all go over a VPN, while gaming and stuff like that could be done on the connection itself. But it's just, these things always trigger me to start thinking about how I can get around it. I've got nothing to hide. I just don't believe that I should be forced to, you know, have my data checked into in this way. I find it offensive.
One of the ways that people get concerned over things like this is the method with which, whether it's an ISP, whether it's a government, whether it's a man in the middle attack, is how they determine the nature of your activity. And on the web, even if you are encrypting the content of your traffic, it's still possible, because of DNS, for an ISP to see the websites that you go to. For example, if you type in a web address, that web address needs converting to an IP address where the actual website itself is stored. And to do that conversion, your ISP, which is the first point of contact, in broadly speaking, for something like that, is the one that translates that, which means that even if your data is encrypted, the ISP still needs to know the website you visit in order to show you that website. So there have been, over the last couple of years in particular, more and more options for changing that on your home network, which you can do without needing a VPN, which could in some ways solve part of your concern, Ian. Cloudflare, for example, has a service called 1111, which you, on your computer, you can, if you know how to, you can manually change the DNS.
Well, can I tell you what I'm doing at the moment, Chief? How I run my network. So I've got a Raspberry Pi that runs Pi-hole,
Nice.
Which filters out adverts. Now, obviously, I can do that selectively. I could pick and choose what I want to have, but it's much less about adverts than it is about generally stopping nefarious things. I've got a couple of smart TVs in this house, and I find the sort of information that they're reported to send back to home a bit much, frankly. I've got an LG and a Samsung, and both of those companies have a bit of an issue in terms of showing adverts on TVs you bought, which I find annoying. But also, you know, they're very noisy. Samsung TVs in particular do a lot of chatting to servers on the internet. So I've opted to block that kind of activity on my network. Now, I believe that there is a way to get either use the Raspberry Pi to use the Cloudflare DNS in the secure way you described, because it's not, I don't think it's quite as simple as just using 1.1.1.1, is it? It requires that you have there is a setup that's needed in order to maintain that security. Now, I believe that there's a way to do that on the Raspberry Pi, because obviously what it's doing is it's intercepting all DNS requests and translating them for the network, and it's able to then filter out things that you don't want it to do. So it should be possible for me to add that in. I will look into it and I will report if I'm successful in that quest.
Do that. I should say that I use Cloudflare's system on my computers. It's called Warp. It's 1111. If you Google Warp Cloudflare 1111, you'll find it. There's links to how to install that on computers and things. And there are options to use a VPN with that, but you don't have to use their VPN, and it is free. So you can just use that if you want to. And it provides a little bit of extra protection. It's obvious there are privacy advocates out there that would say that this is still not good enough and everyone should be using encrypted DNS and all this sort of thing. But as a kind of first step, and if you just wish to remove your ISP from certain aspects of knowing what you are browsing online, then it's a decent... It is a decent first step, rather than going down any more heavy-handed routes. But just going back to the main story here, I think that I believe that with the Investigatory Powers Act being passed in 2016, there's a statute, isn't there, where they have to talk about the effectiveness of this within 5 years, or maybe 5 or 6 years, which basically suggests, if I'm right, and I'm going off script a bit here, that there should be a review into how it's working this year, and maybe we'll learn more about this test as a result of that.
Yes.
As I understand it. And maybe if there's somebody listening who knows a little bit more about that, can write in and tell us, and we can explain it on next week's show or a future episode. But the fact that this has been going on for 2 years and is shrouded in secrecy doesn't win them any favours in my mind, I believe.
No, I think, you know, it's a secret project that's just not... It lacks any of the clarity that I would imagine is necessary for this kind of thing. I feel very angry that it's allowed to happen in the first place, and that we always knew that Investigatory Powers Bill was going to be a problem, and I'm not surprised to see that it has raised its head again, and I am livid about it. But I am also tired, so damn tired of, you know, people thinking it's okay to just do what they want with my data.
Trust no one. That's the thing. Trust no one.
Yeah, very good point.
Everyone's a liar until proven otherwise. That's my general view in life and in
also this the opinion of Dr. Gregory House from the popular and eponymous TV show House.
Never seen it.
Oh, it's very good, Nate. You should watch it. I mean, maybe not, but you should. It is good.
Valuable insight there.
I'll speak to you later about why you shouldn't. But okay, you should. It's great.
I do encourage anyone who's been intrigued by this story to go and read Wired's piece. It's Matt Burgess, I think, wrote it. There's a link in the show notes. There's a link in the MP3 description. And I will be keeping my eye on this, so you can expect to hear more about this later in the year. Any thoughts, though, in the meantime? UKTechShow@iCloud.com. We'll be right back. The BBC wrote this week that Netflix is trialling a crackdown on password sharing. Some users have reported seeing a screen that says, if you don't live with the owner of this account, you need your own account to keep watching. A spokesperson told the BBC that this test is designed to help ensure that people using Netflix accounts are authorized to do so. A decision has yet to be made as to whether the company will roll this out across its network, the BBC wrote. Now, in the trial, users can verify they are allowed to access the account with a code, which gets sent over text or email. And Netflix is trying to crack down on ineligible users in general, though it's not really been made clear, I don't think, how many people are using the platform against their term of service, which password sharing is against. And to be honest, whether password sharing is reducing the company's ability to increase its revenue anyway. And I know you have strong views on this, Ian, because you wrote about it as well.
I have indeed just written about it. Well, I say just written about it. I wrote it on Friday and published it today. But yes, I think that Netflix is going to find itself having problems here. And I think one of the reasons is that Netflix is an expensive service. It's one of the more expensive services, and I don't necessarily feel like it has as much content on it as others that have sort of come along later but rely on a big backlog of content. For, you know, Netflix is a company, whereas most of the other streaming services that are appearing, you know, Disney Plus, that's a $2 billion service, whatever. 2 billion, is that right? Is it? It's massive anyway. And you know, and it's backed by Disney. There's a huge amount of content and back catalogue and all that kind of stuff on there. And I think Netflix also, I think it's the business model of Netflix that really winds me up a bit, actually, because it's always been sold on, you can watch this on 4 devices. So it kind of, it's sort of suggested, isn't it, that, yeah, sure, you know, obviously the ideal situation is that you're living with these people. But as I pointed out in my piece, the modern family, to use a Disney IP, is not like a nuclear family. You know, there are stepchildren, there are stepparents, there are people living in different houses. They are, you know, they're still all family, but they're, you know, the process is not like it used to be. You know, it's not as obvious that the children would be living with both parents when they may not be. So, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like, you know, you've got your Netflix subscription and you pick and choose who you want added to it. Now, maybe there should be some sort of limit on, you know, the number of distinct devices you could have, say, you know, so maybe you're picking 4 devices. That's a bit more how Sky does it, I think. So you could theoretically have a friend's device added, but that would be one device that you couldn't use. So you'd have to be very careful about it. And that might mean that you can only ever have Netflix on one TV or something like that. Who knows how you solve this problem? But I feel like sort of targeting people in this way won't really solve anything. My biggest concern is, well, it's not my biggest concern, but my gut feeling is that, sure, if people are sharing Netflix passwords, then there's a really big chance they're also prepared to share an email address that has a, you know, the code in it that you can unlock the service for if that prompt pops up. So I just don't know. I think what Netflix is really doing is annoying people, and it will have very little benefit for them, aside from the fact that obviously they're going to be under huge pressure to continue increasing revenues, and they're going to struggle to do that as their subscriber numbers peak, because there is obviously only a finite number of people in the world who are prepared to subscribe.
And there is a line in your story that I thought was quite interesting. You wrote, on the flip side, there are some people who would struggle to pay Netflix's ever-increasing subscription fee. That means that cutting them off won't necessarily result in more subscriptions, just fewer viewers. And yeah. And I'd add a further caveat that if you've got 3 other people using Netflix, maybe you're less likely to want to cancel your own subscription, because you're also going to be cutting off your mates.
Absolutely.
It's like a stickiness in that, isn't there?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that's very true. You know what? Because what I feel at the moment is, and this is something I think this, it might, we might even have discussed it on the show, I feel like the future for streaming services is actually possibly going to be people will subscribe to a different service every month, and they'll go through what they've got left to watch on Netflix, and they'll, you know, they'll watch all of that in a month or two, then they'll cancel their Netflix subscription, and then they'll pick up their Disney Plus subscription, and then they'll watch what they want to watch on that for a couple of months, then they'll cancel that and they'll go to Amazon Prime or whatever. Because fundamentally, these companies are increasing a number at an alarming rate, and we're expected to front up 10 odd quid for each one. So by the time you've finished, you could be looking at £100 bill a month if you want, you know, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, whatever the HBO, HBO Max, if that ever gets to the UK. I mean, God forbid you've got Sky Now or something like that as well. You know, that's another chunk of change. So it gets very expensive. And I just don't, people just physically have a certain amount of money. I don't have an unlimited budget for things like streaming. I just don't. And I feel like that what we're seeing is that it's almost the exact thing that Netflix was going to stop has now, it is just over. Like, the good thing about Netflix was it wasn't a company that was part of the Hollywood ecosystem. It was a company that offered access to Hollywood's product. So, you know, therefore, it could be anything. It could be a Disney show, or it could be a Universal show, or it could be a CBS show. But now all those companies obviously want a piece of the pie, and they want to have that guaranteed income from a subscription. And so Netflix is going to struggle increasingly. It's going to have to increase its own owned original content, which is expensive, which is possibly why this has become an issue again. And it's also, you know, got to compete with companies that have millions of hours of archive TV. I mean, think about what Disney owns. It not only does it own all of its Disney content, it owns Pixar, it owns Star Wars, it owns ABC TV in America. You know, there are so much content sitting in that mouse house that Netflix can't ever hope to compete with it.
Al in the chat room raises a point that I think a lot of people may find themselves agreeing with as well, because Netflix has tiers. You know, there's not one plan like Disney Plus. There are tiers depending on whether you want multiple devices, whether you want 4K or not. And Al said that if they clamp down on this, then he'll reduce to a basic subscription because he doesn't have a 4K TV anyway. And the premium that he's paying is to be able to share with his sister. And so, yeah, if you remove that ability, why maybe some people would drop down rather than cancel outright. But there's another thing I wanted to mention, which is the idea of being in sort of like a syndicate, which I've heard quite a lot of people doing, which is where if you own a Netflix account and you let three friends have a profile on that Netflix account, each of those friends is paying for, or maybe one is paying for Disney, another one is paying for, say, Now TV, and another one's paying for something else. Each of you has an account or a profile on each of those. So it means that you're only paying for one service each, but you've got access to all the services of your little syndicate circle. And I've heard of several people doing this, and I'm sure other people do as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, because I suppose it gives you the option to have access to something you wouldn't otherwise be prepared to pay for in its entirety. Like, I took a Disney Plus subscription because I thought, oh, well, it's, you know, it's just about to be to go up in price, and I'd like to see some of the stuff in Stars. There's some shows in there that I was interested in. You know, so I thought, well, all right, I'll do it for a year, but I think it's going to be a 1 year deal for me. I don't think I'm going to carry on past that year. Purely because I don't think I'm going to be able to afford to spend that kind of money on it every year, and you know, and I've had Netflix since it launched in the UK, and I wouldn't be thrilled about having to cancel it, but I feel like I'm getting to the point now where Netflix is increasingly not providing that much value to me. I feel like I get more out of Amazon Prime almost, although obviously, as we discussed, I'm not sure if we discussed it in the show, but we certainly discussed it offline. Amazon adding ads in between episodes has really...
We did talk about it last week, and I saw you'd written about it.
I have indeed written about it, yeah.
Go on.
But I think I'd rather have ads, to be honest, than, you know, than have the restriction on it. But of course, you know, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime all are much stricter on the number of people that can view concurrently anyway. Netflix is the only company, as far as I know, that allows you to stream to more than one device at any one time.
I don't know. I feel like others do, but I have no evidence for that. And I can't think of an example.
It'd have to be one we'd look into, but it's quite complicated. But yeah, you know, and again, I often think, well, I'd quite like Apple TV, but I don't particularly feel like I can afford to spend yet another £6 a month on whatever it is, $4.99 a month on another service. So
just
maybe
buy
I'll wait
another
£1,000
iPhone and you get it for free. Problem solved.
That is true. And I mean, you know, my iPhone is coming towards the end of its life now. So a decision does need to be made. The battery is now kind of not doing so great. And this phone, I would be difficult for me to replace the battery in it for complicated reasons. I feel like I might end up buying a phone anyway, and then I would get that.
Nick in our live chat says, I share my Microsoft 365 account with friends and family, and my sister-in-law shares her Netflix with me. Now, I find that's a really interesting use of subscription syndicate life, isn't it?
I feel sorry for the people that are just getting the Microsoft account out of it.
You can get, you know, you can get the word processing and emails,
I'm going to get the Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah, someone's getting a poor deal out of that, Nick, so you're very smart to...
How much do you subscribe to, Nate? What's on your current roster of things?
I pay for Netflix, Disney Plus, Apple TV.
Yeah. And Amazon. Are you a Prime subscriber?
Amazon, I have Andy's account. Ooh. I don't have my own for that. I use Andy's. Because there's never anything I want to watch on Amazon.
Interesting.
Because I don't watch that much. Like we're watching reruns of old Frasier at the moment. Because I'd never watched it all the way through. So you can only get that on iTunes. That doesn't seem to be on any streaming platform
Well, that's because its rights are tied up. Is it? Oh, I can't remember who it is. Owns it? Is it Peacock? NBC Universal.
It's very difficult to access here. And
actually no, it's Paramount, I think, Paramount Plus. So when Paramount Plus launches, if it ever comes to the UK, then they're talking about a new Frasier series.
Yeah, Mike in our live chat says he was expecting me to have all of them, but we just don't.
I'm not surprised by that at all. I suspected you wouldn't have that many. Are you getting much use out of your Apple TV subscription? Although I suspect you haven't paid for it, have you? Because you've bought an iPad.
Exactly. It tends to come whenever I buy a new thing. I tend to get it bundled.
But and they
I
do, keep I, extending it as well.
I do have it signed up to renew at such point that it you know any free trials that I have expire naturally. But I don't honestly know if it has. I don't feel like I use it that much. I liked Dickinson. I like the morning show. I'm looking forward to what's that one? For All Mankind.
So that's the one I was going to suggest actually, because I've basically had a quick look. Because the good thing about Apple TV is that you can watch the first episode of things free anyway. In fact, some cases it's two episodes, so you get a real flavour for a show before even subscribing, which I found quite useful.
I'll tell you what I'm waiting for, and I'm sure this will happen at some point. Probably with some big spending on Apple's part to do so, is imagine doing with movies and TV shows what it did with the iTunes Music Store, which is to say launch Apple Music and basically say for £10 a month you can stream all this stuff instead of having to buy it. The files are the same, it works the same, everything's the same. It's just instead of pressing buy on each season of whatever, you're actually instead pressing play.
I mean, here's the thing, right? If Apple wanted to do that, I don't think they'd be able to do it for £10 a month.
No,
but I do think they could do it for £50 a month. And imagine that if you had access to all of the films and TV shows in the iTunes library for £50 a month,
because everything's
on there. You wouldn't need anything else, and it would be absolutely amazing. But I have a feeling that, you know, I was watching. It was a Bloomberg thing, wasn't it? There was the streaming. They did a quick take, did a longer form. Look at Napster and all of the kind of stuff that they had loads of interviews. It was really good, and Apple sort of came along at the right point because the music industry had been suffering a little bit at Napster, but it wasn't desperate.
Are you and talking then, about the video that I made?
I don't know if you did. Did you make this? I don't know. Is the honest answer to that question?
I mean, you're describing something that I did make.
Well, if you did make it, then but you didn't tell me you made it. But I did watch. It's like a three part. Each part is 20 minutes or something like that.
Oh no, I don't think that was mine then.
I'll find the link now. I know you have done similar stuff before, but this was suggested to me on my YouTube play, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And I watched a couple of episodes, And there were 20 minutes each or something, and it was really good. But part of the thing was about how Apple, you know, picked a point where the music industry was really struggling and said, right, the answer to your problem is this. You'll sell songs for 99p and you'll get lots of revenue from it because there's a huge demand for digital music. But by signing up to it, the music industry kind of wanted to capture that money from the Napster people, but obviously killed the album in so doing, because there was no way, you know. I mean, obviously people do still buy albums, but the numbers of people buying albums is tiny now. But I think that's got a lot to do with the quality of an album. I mean, there are some albums in your collection, I'm sure, Nate, that you couldn't just buy one song. The product is the thing. So you'd want all of it. So it's more about how artists view creation, I think. And some artists thrive in singles, I think. And some artists probably benefit more from albums.
I feel like we're getting off topic a bit, but you are right.
You're not wrong. I just wanted to contextualize the fact that, you know, Apple could do that, but I feel like Hollywood is a bit too powerful and
it doesn't need it. The difference is
Hollywood doesn't need it. It's got
Netflix paying through the nose. It's selling South Park for $300 million or whatever the deals are. It's selling The Office for hundreds of billions of dollars. Like,
yes, but here's my thing, right? So that's not sustainable. Netflix is operating at a massive loss. It's another company that's funded by
profitable
venture capital.
I don't think it is profitable.
I thought they were a big, I thought they had a significant amount of debt.
They've
cleared it, have they?
They have. Well, they still have debt, but they're still profitable.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's debt and there's debt, isn't there? But anyway, you know, but is it sustainable if you're going to operate in a like-for-like environment? Like, could you do that and still create new shows and have everything, you know, operating in a way that people want to subscribe to it? And the answer is it's going to become more and more difficult for them to do that, because people are going to look at things like, you know, people like shows they already like. So they're going to look at Disney Plus and they're going to go, oh, look, I really liked Scrubs, I'll subscribe to that. Netflix is going to increasingly not have access to those archive shows because the companies are going to want to hoard that their own content for their own services. And that's going to create a much bigger problem for Netflix in the long run, because it's going to be reliant on what it produces. Now, there's lots of Netflix shows I really like. There's also a lot of Netflix shows that I'm like, this isn't really landing for me. Like, there are better things out there. So, you know, it's a thing. I think Amazon actually arguably does originals better than Netflix does. I certainly think they're a bit more deep.
Well, if you have a view on this, do let us know, of course. UKTechShow@iCloud.com. There are a number of issues to unpack. The sharing of passwords, how you manage passwords between services and perhaps between friends and family. Would you pay £50 a month to access all of Apple's iTunes Store content for a flat rate, unlimited? I feel like I probably would, and I would probably cancel everything else in order to do so. But you may have different experiences and suggestions, so do send them to us, uktechshow@icloud.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Let's check in with our mailbag. I had an interesting message come in from a regular listener, Tom, not of merit lineage, but a Tom nonetheless, who had a view on the adverts happening between shows and ahead of shows, which we did briefly talk about last week, and we briefly touched on it this week as well. But he said that adverts for other shows before other shows does also happen on Now TV here in the UK. Ah. So, but he has a system, which is if he stops a show partway through, then when he restarts it, you don't get more ads. So now, Tom says, instead of watching shows start to finish, I watch half of one and half of the next to avoid seeing an ad between the two.
Inventive.
Not sure that's going to work for absolutely everybody. But Al in our live chat says there's no ads on Now TV if you watch it through an Apple TV box.
Nice.
So maybe there's a way. Maybe you need to get yourself an Apple TV, Tom.
Or if they're serving their ads from a different platform, then you can easily ad block them. But yeah, a lot like YouTube, for example, has started serving its ads off its own platform now. They're not using something like DoubleClick, where you can easily tell it's an ad. And that's an ongoing problem. That's exactly what Amazon was doing as well. Like, there's no way you can block those because they just appear to be content.
Well, thank you for the message, Tom. Anyone else can always send us feedback to uktechshow@icloud.com. I think it's time we keep other people informed about things Tom Merritt's doing. Another Tom in our circle of love. Let's check in and see what's been happening this week on DTNS in the US.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, a way to analyze encrypted data without decrypting. Nate Langson pops in to talk about the return of an in-person Mobile World Congress, Line's plan for fact-checking in Taiwan without having to spy on all your messages, a major security breach from a security camera provider, why a non-fungible token of digital art sold for $69 million at Christie's, and Allison Sheridan reports from the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
He's not wrong. I was on the show this week talking about Mobile World Congress.
Fantastic.
So if you want to hear what I just said, but in a different context and with different replies, you can go and listen to DTNS. It was actually a different topic. We picked up different things to focus on. But yeah, if you want the complete collection of my views, then that's how. Thank you, Tom. Ian, I think that's about it for this week. I have nothing more to say to you. So shall we just finish the show?
Let's do that.
Good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, patrons, for sticking with us for another week. You are beautiful, and we love you. And we will see you in 7 days' time, I believe.
Yes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.